This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
You're tuned in to 950 AM on your dial. You're probably listening on a computer, though, aren't you? Or something else. But it's fun to be in your car and be tuned into 950 on your AM dial. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. He's still on vacation. Wow, it's getting long.
I know. Too much vacation for Matt. We'll have to do something about that when he gets back.
Yeah, it seems like it. That's Brett, by the way, producing the show today on the board. How you been last night, Brett? I saw you yesterday. So
I've been doing all right. And, you know, you were talking about radio dials. I'm still happy that the one in my office that I have playing in the background still has a dial. Not many radios like that are around, though.
Yeah, I have a wind-up because my wife and daughter know that I'm such an old-school radio guy. They gave me a wind-up, like it's kind of like an emergency radio, but it's you can't really just buy a radio anymore.
So, no. People, if you go to the store and ask for a radio, they'll probably look at you like you have two heads.
Yeah, like what are you, from outer space?
Yeah.
We don't have radios on Earth.
Yeah.
And actually, when I listen to AM 950 in my Tesla, it's still streaming. It's not actually an AM radio.
Oh, you go with the streaming style too, yeah.
Well, it doesn't have an AM radio. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing. I have another car that has an AM radio, but it's not hooked up right now. But I'm excited to get it hooked up just so I can listen to AM 950. But then I realize the best person to listen to is Todd Mickelson. And whenever Todd Mickelson's on the air, I can't listen in my car.
That makes it difficult. Yeah.
So
we need to clone you.
Say, here's something that we all kind of forgot about. Remember the big thing everyone was talking about 4 months ago, I want to say, perhaps? Well, we're being reminded of that. Justice Stephen Breyer in the Supreme Court Justice, Stephen Breyer will retire within the next 24 hours, and Ketanji Brown Jackson will be sworn in as the next Associate Justice of the Supreme Court. That's going to happen tomorrow. She will be the first African-American woman on the Supreme Court in the history of the United States. Remember that, everybody? Well, it's finally happening. But one thing I wanted to start to get at, I decided that I would try, and whenever I think I'm going to do this, it's difficult because it's almost like writing a skit. So, but I'm going to give it a try. We're going to do a countdown. We're going to do a Casey Kasem's countdown of the most misleading, misguided, or just stupid things Minnesota Republicans have done this week. Number five, our next artist is a doctor who doesn't believe in science. He also thinks that he has the capacity to run for governor of a state. His next song, number five, is called Jensen Gas Price Reduction Plan. So we're going to talk about the Jensen Gas Price Reduction Plan. He has a thing on his website that talks about how to fight inflation. And then he has all these things that are, you know, misleading, misguided, or just stupid. And this is one of them. He's talking about cutting gas prices. And I'm sure, you know, he Wikipedia'd or he asked somebody and they scrambled to try and figure out a plan. But the reality of it, of course, doesn't really work very well. So I'm gonna read from an article from KVRR. It's a website and it's a Fox 9 station somewhere in Minnesota. I don't know, but in his race against DFL Governor Tim Walz, Republican candidate Dr. Scott Jensen is proposing to repeal Minnesota's minimum markup law and suspend the state's gas tax. moves, he says, will bring down the cost of gas by 50 cents per gallon. So these are pretty obscure things, I know. And I also know how it is when you're first – like when I first decided I was going to run for the state house, I knew a lot about politics nationally. I knew I was a history buff and a political junkie and all that. But when I had to learn more about the ins and outs of actual Minnesota state law and issues, it was a completely different thing. And so I remember kind of scrambling to come up with some original ideas that would make me stand out as – you know, but that's basically because I was an amateur. I was a rookie. It was a rookie mistake. I see candidates doing it all the time, making the same rookie mistake, like coming up with ideas like, hey, you know what I was thinking? And then I talked to my friend who knows a lot about this, and he said we could do this. And it's like, yeah, that's not realistic at all. So basically, this is what Jensen is doing, except the difference is 10 years ago, I was for the first time running for the Minnesota State House. He's running – he was already in the legislature. He was a state senator, and now he's running to be the governor, and he's still making this rookie mistake. Scott Jensen says, if we remove the statute that fixes prices, it would save 20 cents. If we remove the Minnesota portion of the gas tax, that's another 30 cents. But it's more complicated. The statute that fixes prices, we'll go into that a little bit in depth here. At current prices, Minnesota law requires retailers to sell gas for 8 cents more than they bought it. That law took effect in 2001, following an intense lobbying battle detailed by the Wall Street Journal. Walmart had recently entered the gas station market and was selling fuel at a loss to attract customers to its stores. Now, of course, what ended up happening was other local gas stations were losing money because Walmart is this huge mammoth place and people found it convenient to just get their gas when they were stopping in at Walmart. I myself have always I only used the bathrooms at Walmart. There was one time I went into a Walmart to use their bathroom. I otherwise boycotted them. They have nice bathrooms. But I don't have to pay him to use it. So anyway, so Minnesota lawmakers aiming to protect mom-and-pop retailers responded by imposing a law banning below-cost sales. 2 decades later, efforts to repeal the law would likely draw a chilly reception from industry groups. Basically, mom-and-pop retailers, not being able to sell gas for less than you bought it for, it actually protects the small mom-and-pop retailers. So this guy Lance Klatt, executive director of the Minnesota Service Stations and Convenience Stores Association. Wow, there's an association for absolutely everything. He said that his group would oppose repeal efforts. Klatt pointed out to a study from researchers at the University of Wisconsin that showed drivers paid more for gas in states where there were no laws banning below-cost sales. The Minnesota Petroleum Marketers Association has not had a chance to talk with Jensen about the issue and said the group's Tim Gross, the group's executive director, he doesn't want to talk about it until he actually meets with Jensen because – he's thinking, okay, I don't know what this guy's talking about. I don't want to make any comments. This guy sounds crazy and dumb, and I don't want to, be quoted in this. I don't want to be brought into this matter by a crazy and dumb man. The Walz campaign criticized Jensen for opposing an $8 billion package of tax cuts and new spending that failed to pass during the legislature's regular session. Governor Walz has been pushing for a bipartisan deal that would provide financial relief for Minnesotans facing rising prices. That was a statement by Nicole Johnson, his campaign manager. If Scott Jensen cared more about helping working families than he did about politics, he wouldn't be asking Senate Republicans to kill that deal. Now, we're going to talk about that a little later when we're doing a segment about how much of a liar Jeremy Miller is. And a segment called Dems in Disarray, except the opposite. Dems are not the party in disarray. So we're going to talk about that. And we're also going to even review part of a really great interview I heard that was done last Friday of the Minnesota Speaker of the House. And it was actually on AM 950. So we're going to review a little bit of that. But and we're going to talk about Jensen and his relationship to the Minnesota Republican Party. Jensen has said he would have liked lawmakers to pass tax cuts, which totaled half of the $8 billion, along with certain spending measures such as for police assisting living facilities. Now, he said he would have liked lawmakers to pass all of that, but yet he called the Republican lawmaker leaders and told them, please don't pass this. So Jensen isn't the first to propose a suspension of Minnesota's 28.5 cent per gallon gas tax. That's the other thing. Earlier this year, five Democratic members of the Minnesota House proposed a gas tax holiday running from Memorial Day to Labor Day. At the time, Jensen's fellow Republicans blasted the idea as an election year gimmick. So what do Minnesota Republicans want to do? Do they want to get rid of the gas tax, or do they think that the gas getting rid of the gas tax is just an election year gimmick by DFLers? And this goes back to what we were talking about also with Melissa Hortman, the Speaker of the House, in this really great interview I heard last Friday on the radio, but not on my live dial-in radio. I had to listen in retrospect online. But online is a good tool to listen to some good radio shows. The thing is that Republicans don't really want anything to happen. They don't want to get rid of the gas tax. They don't want the price of gas to go down. They want people to be having problems so that they can say, you see how much you're hurting? You see how everything sucks right now? You have to vote us in. Now, if we vote them in, they're not going to know what to do because they don't have anyone left that knows how to govern in their party anymore. So here's another thing. We're talking about $1,000 here. It's quite a few Phillips you could get for $1,000, says Walls, because he wanted to give $500 per adult. And this is a couple months ago. I think he's raised that now for what he would like to do. And so then you come down to Jensen talking about his proposal. And Jensen says his plan would save a Minnesota household approximately $1,000. Now, Walls just said, well, if I give, you know, if it's a household, it's a married couple, I'll give them a total of $1,000. And he said, you can get quite a few Phillips on that. So it's all kind of the same savings, and Walls is trying to come up with ways to use the surplus to put money in people's pockets. He does see that there is inflation. Of course, the Republican Party gives him so much credit that they think he's responsible for a global inflation surge, but it's not his fault. He's trying to find other ways of dealing with it. Now, in reality, Jensen, when he says it would save a Minnesota household approximately $100, he's either lying or just completely wrong and doesn't know how to do math. His figures rely on several assumptions, as illustrated for a driver who uses 15 gallons of gas per week. I don't know. Do you think that's maybe about an average, Brett? 15 gallons? How much? I have an electric car now, so.
Yeah.
I can't even, and I don't drive as much because my business is really close to my house. 15 gallons per week, probably somebody who has to drive 15 to 20 miles to their job, I would say that they probably use about 15 gallons a week.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Yeah. Depends on factors, but I think that's a good estimate.
Yeah. Depends on if you're somebody who drives a huge truck that you don't need or somebody who buys an economical car. But if the Minnesota gas tax were suspended based on somebody who uses 15 miles of gas per week, that driver would save about $230 per year. So per couple, then, that comes out to $460. That's less than half of $1,000, Scott Jensen. You know, your phone probably has a calculator, by the way. If the legislature repealed the state's minimum markup law, there's disagreement over the impact to consumers. If gas stations uniformly lowered their prices by 8 cents, the same driver would save $60 per year, $120 per couple. So even if you add that to the $460, that's $580. I didn't even use my calculator on my phone. Jensen's figure adds a third variable, Walz's 2019 proposal to increase the state's gas tax by 20 cents per gallon. Doing so would have added $156 per driver, or $312 per couple. So still, the Jensen plan still does not save as much money as he says it would, even if the added price per gallon gas tax was added. Now, of course, Walz did kind of stick up for himself. He said, you know, in that 2019 plan, the governor said he proposed it when gas prices were less than $2 per gallon. It was also before a worldwide pandemic. There was no hope of a boost in federal infrastructure spending like the new Congress ultimately passed in 2021. That's what Walz said. So that's why he was trying to, you know, one of his ideas was because we needed more money for infrastructure. Well, the pandemic happened. People stopped spending money. We still were getting money in to our coffers. And now we have a huge surplus. And the legislature has failed to figure out what to do with that huge surplus. And it wasn't because Jensen called all of the GOP leaders and urged them to not support this. It wasn't because of that, because they apparently don't like him. That's the cliffhanger that we're going to go through later in a little bit more detail. But Jensen still, you know, we had a chance to, you know, we went through all the numbers. It was divvying up basically the surplus into different categories, education, infrastructure, and a couple other things, because we have this really great opportunity to improve things in Minnesota by investing, because we have the money to invest. Republicans, I don't know. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want things to get better is the point and the problem. So we'll take a break and come back. And you're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I believe when we come back, we're going to start to talk about a mixture of Dems in disarray, but opposite, and Jeremy Miller being an incredible liar, along with all of his buddies in the Minnesota GOP. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. We'll be right back.
Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Me on bass.
Hey, boy. What you say, boy?
Oh, this is your rap. This is your rap
song. Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Recorded. Of course it is. Yeah.
You got a good rap voice. So, R. Kelly. I make the point all the time that we have to be patient when people are being prosecuted and thrown in jail. R. Kelly, finally today, sentenced to 30 years in prison. How many years ago was it that R. Kelly was first indicted for, and basically it's sexual abuse and assault and things like that. It's got to be like 4 years or something.
It seems like at least that.
Yeah.
It feels almost like it could be a decade ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
It probably is like 4 years though.
Yeah. The last 4 years has felt like a decade. But you know, that's why when we're talking about all these things like January 6th and Trump and all these people, Rudy Giuliani, these people that everybody is wondering why they're not yet in prison. Well, you know, we have to take our time. Otherwise, we're going to throw too many innocent people in prison. So a reminder that R. Kelly was only just today sentenced. Ghislaine Maxwell was only just sentenced yesterday. Her trial went her thing went a lot quicker. But she's a woman. So, you know, even in criminality, women are discriminated against. So far, no men in the whole that whole mess have paid anything. Just her. Not that she doesn't deserve it. I'm not sticking up for her. But and again, I always remind people, you know, Nixon didn't resign until 2.5 years after the Watergate break-in. And he was going to be impeached for things that happened even before the Watergate break-in. And that was just him resigning. He wasn't even yet going to be in criminal trouble. Ford, of course, pardoned him from that. But, you know, his other guys, all the president's men, the guys who went to jail, pretty much went to jail in 1977, which is 5 years after the original Watergate break-in. So things take time. And now all of a sudden things are on the fast track with these committee hearings. But when we left, I told you I was going to talk about the Minnesota Republican Party and how the majority leader, the Republican leader in the Senate, Jeremy Miller, is a liar. Liar, liar, pants on, fire. That's Al Pacino. Not very good. Not a very good job of Al Pacino by me. So I'm going to do a little bit of review, and we're going to listen to part of this really great interview I heard last Friday of Melissa Hortman, the Minnesota Speaker of the House, who had a comment on this as well. But to set it up, I'm going to go back to – I said this a week ago. I told this story. So this is a story, again, written by Patrick Coulican, by our now award-winning Minnesota Reformer, May 15th, 2022. So May 15th, about a week before the end of session here in Minnesota, Governor Tim Walz and legislative leaders have agreed to the broad outlines of a deal that would divide up the state surplus evenly between tax cuts, spending increases, and money put into reserve. Leaders of the DFL majority House and GOP-controlled Senate and the DFL governor have agreed to use $4 billion for tax cuts, $4 billion on spending increases during the next 3 years, while leaving $4 billion in the bank to soften the blow of a potential recession. If the agreement is passed – now, of course, we were talking about recession a month ago, a month and a half ago. I don't believe a recession is going to occur. I think we're going to balance it out and not go too far to bring to change this inflation into a recession. But that's, you know, that's just me. So going back to this article, if the agreement is passed and signed, they would spend $1.6 billion and cut taxes by the same amount during the next fiscal year. During the two-year budget cycle, they'll spend $2.4 billion and tax cuts by the same amount. That's $2.4 billion in tax cuts in 2 years. The agreement is a surprising show of bipartisanship during what promises to be a tumultuous election year. The divided legislature must now fill in the details, which won't be easy as lawmakers race to finish before the May 23rd deadline. Now, they did fill in those details. An early draft of the spending plans, though not yet finalized, show $1 billion of the new spending going to education, $1 billion going to health and human services, and $450 million to public safety, with smaller increases in other areas. Public safety, I will repeat. Now, this is 1 month later. Patrick Coulican again writes, Republicans and Democratic farmer labor lawmakers broke off negotiations Thursday, leaving billions of dollars on the table that will leave school districts scrambling to deal with budget shortfalls and local governments without public works money to complete important projects. Minnesotans confronted the highest inflation in decades. They won't see any direct payments or tax cuts to ease the pain of high gas and grocery bills. DFL Governor Tim Walz and House Speaker Melissa Hortman blamed the Republican majority Senate. Walz said at a news conference that both he and Melissa Hortman held, this one is deeply disappointing because it feels like we were negotiating with ourselves over the last few weeks, even though They had a signed deal, actual signatures. That's when you put your signature on something, you're giving your word. It's usually even legal. Now, Jeremy Miller, the Senate leader, the Republican Senate leader, he said, even with a bipartisan legislative agreement to cut income tax and end the tax on Social Security benefits, Democrats weren't willing to pass this bill without billions more in spending. Now, the billions more in spending was agreed to by you, Jeremy Miller, and you signed your name to that agreement. Now, the government's not going to shut down because there was a two-year budget agreed to last year. But Miller had agreed to the broad outlines of a bipartisan agreement about a week before the end of the regular session in May. That deal called for $4 billion in tax cuts, which he wants, $4 billion on spending increases, which he agreed to, and by the way, that's over 3 years, and also leaving $4 billion in the bank to soften the blow of a potential recession or even current inflation. Lawmakers were never able to get the agreement passed into law, however. I wonder why that was. Now, part of it was former state Senator Scott Jensen, the likely GOP nominee for governor against Walz, said that he called Republican senators during the final week of the session and urged them to hold off. So I asked Melissa Hortman about that last week, last Friday. I asked her about both of those things. But the first thing we're going to say is I basically asked, so Melissa, did you really expect this to go all the way through and be signed into law? And here's what she had to say. What happened in the legislature here during this last session? It sounded like you had made a deal, a bipartisan budget deal, and then not, and then yes, and then not. What happened?
Yeah, so the 4 years that I've been speaker, I have had really extraordinary agreements that we've been able to reach with Minnesota Senate Republicans to at least preserve decent funding for education and health care. And we've come together and we've gotten things done. And then this year, at the very end, things blew up. And I'll tell you, the difference is year one, Senate Leader Paul Gazelka, man of his word. Year two, Senate Leader Paul Gazelka, man of his word. Year three, Senate Leader Paul Gazelka, man of his word. And year four, Jeremy Miller, who has no intention of standing behind his word. And, you know, while I disagreed with Paul Gazelka on almost every issue, yeah, he and I were able to work together to get things done for the people of Minnesota, even in the election year. Even in 2020 when COVID was raging and it was an election year.
Yeah.
But what we're seeing in the Minnesota Senate is that the GOP majority has gotten so extreme that they can't even work together to get things done. They're so focused on doing bad things to Democrats that they won't agree to do good things for Minnesotans.
It almost seems like they want things to be bad for Minnesotans so that they can use it in their campaign to say, see how bad things are for you? And we need to change.
Absolutely.
And yeah,
well, you really hit the nail on the head there, because one area, for example, that they claim they want to make a difference is public safety. And Democrats as well, we would like to make investments, because all over the country, all over the world, since COVID, crime rates are up. And there are investments that we could make on a bipartisan basis that would have an impact on that. So if Minnesota Republicans truly wanted to do something about public safety, they would compromise with Minnesota Democrats and we would fund investments in public safety. But actually, like you said, they would rather have things go poorly for people. They would rather have there be more victims of crime than there need to be so that they can exploit it politically. And it's so dangerous to have a political party that's become so extreme that they put Minnesotans' well-being at risk for their own political interests.
Interesting point by the Speaker of the House made there. And she mentions that the Minnesota GOP has become so extreme that they can't even work with each other. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about basically I'm calling it Dems in disarray. Oh, except the opposite. When we come back on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. See you in a minute. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
I feel the earth move under my feet.
Damn right. Damn right.
I don't think I can do the lyrics on this one like I did on the list.
No, neither no. Neither you or I are we're on this one. We're not
no.
We're not funky enough. But yeah, the earth moving under our feet. We have a special guest here. He's gonna take the lead here for just a moment.
Hi, this is Casey Kasem, and we're doing a countdown of the most misleading, misguided, or just stupid things the Minnesota Republicans have done this week. Number four, Doug Wardlow, the candidate who wants to be a Minnesota Attorney General, even though he's lost at least once or twice in the past, is bragging about being endorsed by another general who pleads the fifth when asked if he believes in the American democratic peaceful transfer of power.
That's right, just today. So yesterday we saw Michael Flynn. I hate to call him General Michael Flynn anymore. I don't believe he is worthy of that title. I think he needs to be court-martialed. He was pardoned by Trump, otherwise he'd be sitting in prison right now. But he's not sitting in prison, but he did testify in front of the January 6th committee. And when Liz Cheney, she actually asked him a couple things. Do you think that the violence that happened on the Capitol on January 6th was moral? He said, I plead the fifth. She said, when that violence at the Capitol on January 6th happened, do you think it was illegal? He said, I plead the fifth. And then she asked, do you believe in the American democratic peaceful transition of power? And he said, I plead the fifth. And now Doug Wardlow, who's running for the attorney general seat in Minnesota, so he would be basically in charge of the law, he's very proud to have the endorsement of this guy. So that's part of this series called Dems in Disarray, except opposite. Another thing about Dems in Disarray is that down in the 1st Congressional District, Jeremy Munson. He's running to be the congressman down there, except the Republican Party's really mad at him. They put out a thing saying Jeremy Munson lies. Southern Minnesota can't trust him in Congress. A voter guide. They say Jeremy already conceded that Brad Finstead had won, and then he took that back. The Minnesota GOP is running brutal Facebook ads against Jeremy Munson in the Minnesota GOP 01 primary election. They have a primary election coming up in a couple, maybe a month. I'm not sure when it is. And Munson is challenging Minnesota GOP-endorsed candidate Brad Finstead. And this ad is called Jeremy Munson Lies. So that is the Republican Party going against their own. And then there is also another I'm doing this electronically, which I don't have it all on paper, but let me see where I – okay. I'm really sorry for about this, but
– love technology there when it's not working for you.
Yeah, well, it's in Scott County, I'll have to do it off the top of my head. Scott County, which includes Shakopee, the guy running against Scott Mortensen. Now, Scott Mortensen basically got in because the Republicans added we can call it pro-pot. I can't remember the name of that group.
Yeah, there's two of them over all of those legalized marijuana parties, yes.
Yeah, and the Republicans basically paid for, even gave money to, a candidate who's pro-marijuana because they know that that will siphon votes off from the DFL candidate. And that's kind of how Scott Mortensen won. Now, he also beat the guy who was in the seat back then. And his name is what I can't find right now. But aside from that, he was the state House member in Shakopee. And then he got beat by Scott Mortensen. And then he now is claiming in a piece of literature. So he ran in 2016 and won, and then he lost in 2018 or 2020. And now he's trying to run against Scott Mortensen again. And he put out a piece of lit saying that he has the Republican endorsement. And the Republican committee in that district is refuting that and going against him and calling him a liar and saying that he's breaking the rules and completely turning on him. So and they don't like Scott Mortensen, so, but they're being forced to turn on the guy who's running against Scott Mortensen. Scott Mortensen has been called a petulant child by his colleagues in the House, he's not liked at all. He just does stunts, political stunts, and he's not taken seriously by anybody but himself. And now the Republican Party is having to side with him and go against the guy that they actually would probably prefer to be in there. However, the guy they would prefer to have in there also has a problem with DWI and things like that. That happened back, I guess, in 2019 or 2020. So they have a big mess going on in the Scott County for that House seat. And then the other thing that I think is pretty hilarious is that as we just heard Melissa Hortman say, that the leadership of the Senate broke his word. And then I asked her, I said, so, you know, she said she was fully expecting this deal to go through at the end of session because there was a deal made by the leadership of the House and the Senate and the governor. And it was signed, and then the Senate leader broke his word. And she was really surprised because she hasn't worked with a Republican who's just blatantly broke his word before. She trusts that they keep their word. You can't do that anymore, I guess. And what I asked her was, okay, well, now their most likely gubernatorial candidate, he did win the endorsement at their convention, but he is being primaried against too, I believe. But he's the most likely gubernatorial candidate for the Minnesota Republicans, and he called a bunch of senators and told them to hold off on that deal. So I asked Melissa Hortman if she thinks that Scott Jensen doing that had any pull with them, and here is what she had to say. He apparently pressured the legislature to not go through with this deal. Do you think that he really had pull with them or pull with Jeremy Miller?
No, I don't think so. They don't really even like him. He wasn't a particularly popular member of the Republican caucus because he was kind of all over the map. Mm-hmm. When he got on a bill to support red flag laws, reasonable gun violence prevention position, which he has now apologized for.
Yeah.
The Republicans in the Minnesota Senate were like, you're not one of us. And Scott Jensen was a flip-flopper his whole time in the Senate. Nobody could ever guess where he would be, including his Republican colleagues. So I don't think it's that. I think it's that there's a few right-wingers in the Senate caucus already. And then there are 15 primaries where there are Republican senators who are being challenged from the right. And so I think that they're running scared, and I think that they are thinking more about their political survival than about what's good for the people in their districts.
And it kind of flummoxes me because, you know, running for the state house is a lot different than running for Congress or something. And the fact that they would have far right candidates who are throwing themselves in and challenging incumbents, how do they raise enough money to have a campaign to even win in the primary? What's behind all this? Do you feel like you have a handle on that?
Yeah, there's a really toxic group in Minnesota called Action for Liberty, and they've gotten one sociopath elected, Eric Mortensen from Shakopee. The guy is really very interested in burning the place down, and he's teamed up with this guy who runs the organization, who basically just raises money to pay himself a big salary, but then also uses money to help other Action for Liberty folks get elected. So like in Hastings, for example, you know, there used to be a moderate Republican named Tony Juergens as a state representative. Not too moderate. I mean, not like pro-choice or pro-gay rights or anything. Mm-hmm. A conservative, but like a person who was willing to compromise to get things done. So I don't know if moderate's the right word.
Right.
But there was a kind of a far right-wing person who got into the race and got the Republican endorsement. And I think it's just these far right folks were organized and they were ready and they leaped in and displaced some of these more conventional Republicans.
Yeah, so it's basically Dems in disarray, except the opposite. Minnesota Republican Party is a mess right now, yet they still think that they are going to sweep in the midterm elections. They don't have money. They're unable to raise money. Individual campaigns are having trouble raising money. The gubernatorial campaign's having a huge trouble raising money, and the state party is having huge trouble raising money, whereas the DFL is raking it in like they never have before. What does that tell you? Does that tell you Dems in disarray? Is that what that sounds like?
Not to me, no.
Yeah, and I think you're a reasonable guy.
Well, I think so too, but that doesn't sound like Democrats are in disarray. They're disorganized. They have no idea yet. Doesn't sound like that at all.
Exactly. So, well, we need to take a break, so let's do that. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson in for Matt McNeil. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson back for just a couple minutes here before we got a break at the top of the hour. And then we have another hour. And that's going to include three more in the Casey Kasem's countdown of the most misleading, misguided, or just stupid things the Minnesota Republicans have done this week.
So is it number one going to be the most ridiculous one we have on the list, or are they not ranked necessarily in that order?
You'll have to wait and see.
That's a sell right there. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Got to wait and see.
Right. Here's something just in today. This bulletin just in. AG, the Attorney General from New York, James, I'm announcing a landmark lawsuit against 10 national gun distributors for selling tens of thousands of ghost gun parts that were used to create untraceable ghost guns. The New York City mayor and I are delivering on our promise to hold these companies accountable and protect New Yorkers. And then also, just in, Governor Walz, the electronics is so slow. Governor Walz directing millions of federal funds to public safety initiatives, gun violence prevention. Regardless of what happens at the state legislature, I will continue working to address public safety and ensure Minnesota is the best state to live and raise a family, Governor Walz said. He adds, this funding will fill critical state law enforcement funding shortages and work to prevent gun violence in communities across the state. I don't have time to go into more detail on that, but that's basically it. He is trying to do things because, as we just said before this last break, the legislature is failing to do things. So Governor Walz still getting on it, trying to do something about public safety. Like I said, we got a break for the top of the hour. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil with Brett on the board. We'll be back in a few minutes for the second hour. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett and Todd here with you, sitting in for the Matt McNeil show. Matt's still on vacation. He's been on vacation for too long, but he's still is only halfway there, I think, or less than that. Yeah.
He's not back until next Tuesday when the show debuts, of course, in the new time slot, 3 to 5, when we'll be carried in Milwaukee and Madison, which will be exciting.
Yeah, I don't think that's till Wednesday. I think it's first, second, third, fourth. I think the fourth is Tuesday.
Fourth is actually next Monday.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, my God. Okay, I have to go. No. You're listening to Casey Kasem's countdown of the most misleading, misguided, or just stupid things Minnesota Republicans have done this week. Our next artist has the top four slots. Yes, I'm looking again. Has the top four slots. He is a doctor who doesn't believe in science. This next song is called Reduce the Cost of Living. But of course, it's misleading, misguided, and stupid. And we're going to tell you why, Casey. He has this plan to fight inflation. And it's filled with these things that when you actually read them, it's basically gibberish. So one of the points is called Reduce the Cost of Living. And it's written like this: veto any new tax increases or proposed agency rules that increase the cost of living for Minnesotans. Proposed initiatives from agencies that cost money or mandate action should go through the legislative process and compete in a fair manner as a priority, blah, blah, blah. But I want to point out that the legislative process, and correct me if I'm wrong, Brett, but the legislative process means that the legislature, the House and Senate, come to an agreement and they write a law or something like that. And then they send it to the governor's desk for him to either sign or veto it. So it sounds like he's got kind of a circle going on here. He's saying that any new tax increases or proposed agency rules must go through the legislative process. But the first words are veto any new tax increases or proposed agency rules. So he's going to veto it and say this needs to go through the legislative process, but it already has gone through the legislative process. So then they'd put it through the legislative process again, and then he would veto it again. How many times – I mean, what is this?
It's almost like the circle seems intentional to not get anything done.
I think you're giving him too much credit there. I think that because what your theory would mean that he would have had to put some thought into this paragraph.
That's a good point.
Yeah. I think you're giving him too much credit. We're going to find out more about why I think that when we continue.
Casey Kasem's countdown of the most misleading, misguided, or just stupid things the Minnesota Republicans have done this week.
So we'll continue that a little later. We could have done another countdown. I was at a on Monday, I left here as quick as I could because Kelly Morrison, who's running for the Senate out state Senate out where I live, she's a stellar candidate and kind of a rock star out where I live now. She's the only doctor in the Minnesota State House at the moment. We put a doctor in the house. That was our slogan. She had a really fun event and a huge turnout at a brewery with great beer, and she even brought a spread from another local family-owned restaurant and nice food. And, of course, the weather really cooperated quite well. But we were all surprised at how many people showed up. And she talked about it a little bit, but she only had time to go through about four of these, but she has a list of 23 bills that Kelly Morrison has passed into law during a time when nothing can get passed into law. We even have the gubernatorial candidate on the Republican side saying, veto everything. And And she was still able to, and a lot of these, she had to work with people like Michelle Benson, who she doesn't disagree with pretty much on any issues whatsoever, but she and Michelle Benson worked together and passed, I believe the one that they passed was the Interstate Compact. Yeah, it doesn't matter what it's called, SciPact. But it's an interstate compact allowing licensed psychologists to practice across state lines, expanding needed access to mental health care. She did funding for intensive children's residential mental health care. She got passed into law a Drug Price Transparency Act to help drive down costs. Number four,
telehealth. Allow access to care via telephone or video.
Yeah, I should have done this as the countdown, probably. It would take the whole show, though, because she's passed so many bills. Where's the one I wanted to – oh, here's a really important one, and this is because she is a pediatrician. She's a doctor, a PhD pediatrician. Extending medical assistance for 60 days to 12 months postpartum. It was something like 6 weeks, I think. Or maybe even less than that before she was able to extend this to 60 days to 12 months. It was 60 days and she got it expanded to 12 months. Duh. Now I'm making fun of other people not being able to write a paragraph and now I can't comprehend what I'm reading. But I thought that, it's incredible. She even pointed out, you know, can you believe that there was only medical assistance extended to 60 days after you have a baby? Well, she got it extended to 12 months. The Lawns to Legumes, which is a fun one. Nationally recognized program to help Minnesotans transform traditional lawns into pollinator-friendly habitats. You can make your lawn, instead of mowing your lawn and having it be short green grass because you think you need to show off because you live 300 years ago in London and you needed to show off that you have servants that take care of your lawn instead of being somebody who just has weeds in your lawn, if you're that kind of person, you can or if you don't want to be that kind of person and you don't care about short green grass, you can have a natural looking lawn and even plant plants that are normally supposed to be there. What do they call them? Like indigenous plants, and have it be friendly to bees and pollinators. You can actually get assistance from the state to buy different plants and make your lawn into a pollinator friendly lawn. Oprah Winfrey talked about that law back. She passed this her very first session that she was in the legislature. So we've been talking about the Minnesota Republican Party pretty much this whole show. And I just wanted to point out this is one House member. This is one DFL House member who has passed 23 bills and they're all – it's not anything like, she didn't pass a bill cutting funding to public schools or cutting funding to local towns. She didn't pass any bills like that. She passed bills that help things out. And this is even kind of being hamstrung as for spending. This is still getting these passed. Without really having much ability to have money behind a lot of it. So, that's what the DFL is working on, trying to get things done, trying to move forward. That's the definition of the word progressive. We're trying to make progress. And the Republican Party, as we know, certainly nationally, but of course we have all the Minnesota Republican people also agreeing with things like what the Supreme Court is trying to do now, basically sending us back in time. Keeps getting longer and longer that they're sending us back in time. You can only speculate that they wish they could take away women's voting rights as well. They're trying to take away every other right from women. I have a kind of an interesting story in that vein, and why don't we take a break, and I'll break into that because, like I said, we've been talking about Minnesota issues this whole time, and I'll talk about a national issue when we come back in a few minutes. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson. We'll be right back.
Yes, on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil, who's on vacation. Brett is on the board and the drums, I think, on that one.
Oh, no, yeah. I could be the drummer on Owner of a Lonely Heart. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. I sat that one out, actually.
Oh, not a fan of that one? I could take over.
No, no, no. I wanted to play on it. They wouldn't let me.
Just didn't have – yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. They wouldn't let you. Okay, that's different than
I was being a jerk that day. I don't blame them, actually. You know, the producer, I offended him. I shouldn't have said what I said. And he basically made me go sit in my car for the rest of the day while you were in recording drums and having fun with the other guys. I don't like to remember that day.
You felt sorry for it, though.
I do have remorse.
Yeah, yeah.
So I should get a light sentence. I had a title for this, but I was going to do it days ago, and yesterday we had so many phone calls. It was quite. I think we got 6 phone calls yesterday.
At least, yeah, and there were a couple others I wasn't able to quite get to because I was already on the phone with another person. So, yes, we jumped in phones to it yesterday.
Yeah, and it seemed to be people really, lit up about the Supreme Court and overturning Roe v. Wade. We had 2 calls that were in favor and glad that Roe v. Wade was overturned. One of them was a very nice, reasonable guy, and I think I had a really good conversation that I think was enlightening to both he and I and hopefully the listeners. Another guy who was just kind of, doing the usual BS telling lies.
At least
lies.
Not a jerk, though. And yeah, we'll always take conservative callers. Just don't be a jerk.
He wasn't
don't name call. Don't do any of that. Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't a complete jerk. But I don't like it when people go on the radio and spew BS. And, so that's kind of what he was doing. I'm the only one allowed to do that on this show. And I still try and avoid it. I don't even take advantage of that privilege. This one is called Conservative Pundits Wishful But Dumb Thinking. And I was going to talk about this Monday, I think. It's from a story in The Atlantic by Elaine Godfrey. 3 years ago, Nathan and Emily Berning launched Let Them Live, a nonprofit that gives financial help to women to keep them from following through with abortions. The organization has paid $2.4 million in pregnant women's bills, and the Bernings estimate that they have prevented more than 400 abortions. By the way, this organization they founded, Let Them Live, it asks these women to agree to not get an abortion in exchange for the financial support. So I don't know exactly how I feel about that, but they have a right to do it. The Bernings have never really clamored for the end of Roe v. Wade, but now that the ruling has been overturned, Nathan hopes that the anti-abortion movement will shift its focus to advocating for public policy to support women and families. Nonprofits like his can provide a piece of the solution to the problem, but there's going to have to be a government aspect to it, he said. The pro-life movement in general has not been thinking big enough. So this guy sounds like a nice guy, and he sounds well-intended. I don't agree with what he's doing, but he is truly helping people. I think he's also misleading them to a certain degree, but he is trying to help. And he now believes that the pro-life movement needs to start looking at programs that basically only Democrats have talked about. And he seems to be hopeful, wishful, maybe dumb for thinking it's possible. The people in this movement have fought for decades to reach this moment. They just have to decide what to do now. Nathan Berning is one of many abortion opponents who wants more than anything to see a substantial expansion of the social safety net. There are a dozen others like him. I would say maybe only a dozen others like him. People who said that advocating for things like universal child care and a higher minimum wage should be the logical next step for the movement. But theirs are minority voices in the broader anti-abortion tent. For decades, most abortion opponents have hitched their wagon to a party that has fought tirelessly against state expansion. That alliance is going to constrain any progress toward improving outcomes for women and families. Members of the anti-abortion movement are aware of the reality facing American women. Now that abortion is going to be difficult or impossible to come by in many parts of the country, most people who seek abortions excuse me, I still have that feather in my throat from yesterday. Most people who seek abortions cite financial concerns, and women who have been denied access to abortion are more likely to be in poverty even years down the line, meaning after they have a baby. Mark Rank, a social scientist and professor at Washington University in St. Louis, says now that Roe is gone, there will probably be more anticipated childbirths, and that's going to have an effect on raising the extent of poverty in the United States. Basically, every member of the anti-abortion movement supports helping expectant women and families through private means, such as charities and churches. Where they differ most is on the role of government. Corey Porter, the CEO of Christian Solidarity Worldwide USA, says this same energy that inspired many to stand for hours on hot pavements with signs, make numerous calls to their congressmen, march, and selflessly give countless funds must be the same energy implored to now demand early education, food assistance, and child care relief. Adding that activists should prepare for a rise in need for domestic abuse centers, foster care, and low-income housing. I don't know, Brett, do you think that the Republican Party is all of a sudden going to start talking about all those things and really pushing for those things?
Yeah, it's funny. They never talk about that. And they say, well, we'll get all these kids adopted. There's already 460,000 kids in foster care already. What are we going to do with them? We're just going to add to that list.
Oh, they're too big to cuddle. We need a new one.
Doesn't quite work for the designer babies. Nope.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Going on with this article, Charlie Camosi, an ethics professor at Creighton University School of Medicine and an anti-abortion columnist for the Religion News Service, has long advocated for paid family leave, a higher minimum wage, and expanding Medicaid. Well, good for him. The 26 states that will soon have the tightest abortion restrictions also have the lowest minimum wages on average. 10 of those states have not yet expanded Medicaid. So again, Charlie Camosi sounds like a good guy, but he also seems like a conservative who is wishful and maybe dumb. What he's saying is it's long past time for conservative pro-lifers to take a multi-pronged approach to this. They've been virtually nowhere on policy. Now that tells me he's not dumb. He sounds smart. He's observant. But I think his wishful thinking is misguided. People in Camosi's corner are hopeful that the end of Roe will allow anti-abortion Americans to spring free from their partisan boxes and push for pro-family legislation. Not to do so would be hypocritical, they argue. There is now a really important opening for pro-life Republicans to be more open about their support of social welfare programs, Camosi said. You know, I think I really think that it's Republicans are the dog that caught the car, and I saw my dog Tucker one time. You know, he loves to chase squirrels and chipmunks. he comes really close sometimes, and he seems always inspired and really fired up. He runs super fast. It's fun to watch him. He's like in his natural state when he's chasing something. He's a Springer Spaniel, so that's what he's made to do. And one time he chased a squirrel up a tree, and the squirrel lost its footing and fell off the tree and hit the ground and was stunned for a second, and Tucker got him. And almost immediately, you know, he got him, and he kind of like bit down. I don't know what exactly he did, but he was just had it for a second, maybe 2 or 3 seconds, and then he stopped, and then he looked at Heidi and I. We were across the yard. He looked at us like he didn't know what just happened, and he looked really sad and very remorseful and really, really bummed out. That's what happens when the dog catches the car or the squirrel.
Yeah, the fun's always in the chase.
Right.
Then when you get it, what do you do now?
Exactly.
That's not fun anymore.
Yeah. And Tucker, in fact, did not start immediately supporting things like paid family and leave and child care relief.
You got to talk to Tucker about that.
I know. I didn't know he was a Republican until that moment. No, he's not. We're talking, you know, that's apples and oranges, basically. The thing is that Republicans are the dog that caught the car or the squirrel. And now they are like, well, what do we argue about in the next election? Now that abortion is illegal, we can't yell about that anymore. What have we done? I'll go on with the article. There's not a whole lot left here because I think it makes a good point. Now, basically what this Camosi, nice guy, sounds like, was said, if all this sounds a little too rosy, that's because it probably is. As the GOP saying goes, the government that governs best governs least. The places in America with the strictest abortion laws are also places where suspicion of state involvement runs deep. And investing millions more in government services is a political non-starter. Again, we go to the fact that I actually looked it up to try and get details, and there's so many details, and of course it gets hot into the numbers. But if you look up red states subsidized by blue states, they're basically making the point that the places in America with the strictest abortion laws are basically red states. And if you look that up just in Google, you come up, the headlines is, you know, donor states. What would happen if blue states stopped paying for red states? An AP fact check, blue high tax states fund red low tax states. 6 blue states subsidize 99.98% of the deficits of 42 other states. Those are the different headlines that you get from all kinds of different sources. A lot of them not partisan whatsoever. A lot of them are statistical websites, and the chance of those states being the ones to all of a sudden decide to invest in safety net type of things. We used to call it welfare type of things. Safety net, I think, is a little more descriptive. Going on with this article, the most powerful and influential members of the anti-abortion movement are likely to keep their focus mainly on reducing the number of abortions rather than advocating for more social spending to help women who cannot have them. They'll work on strengthening abortion bans in red states and on passing whatever restrictions they can in blue and purple ones. Expanding the federal social safety net is a conversation for later, says Mallory Carroll, the vice president of communications at Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. Right now, we're saving babies through gestational limits and strengthening the social resources that are out there. So she doesn't want to talk about helping women after they have babies or helping babies after they're actually alive. She has no interest in talking about that. Right now, we're just saving fetuses, really, would be the statement that she should have said. That's what would have been an accurate statement. So time to take another break. When we come back, I think it's time for the next rung of Casey Kasem's Countdown. I'm Todd Mickelson. On AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I think that was you on bass and me on guitar.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't me on the lyrics this time, no.
No. Yeah.
I did the bass then. I actually did play the bass. I think I told you way back when, like when I was in high school, middle school. And
yeah, you actually had a bass and you played it.
Yeah. Left-handed bass and completely forgot
left-handed.
How to play.
Left-handed? Really?
Yep.
Oh, wow. I remember asking you what kind of bass you had. You didn't remember.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I have no idea what it was. Yeah, we're talking like 20 years ago.
And you don't think you could play it?
Probably not. No, I got in at very, very like entry level, just playing scales. Yeah, not even really getting into any songs or things like that.
It's more fun to just like play to records. I never learned scales. Anyway, I think it's time for to continue on Casey Kasem's countdown of the most misleading, misguided, or just stupid things Minnesota Republicans have done this week. Our next artist is a doctor who's not even liked by his own party. Yet they're in a conundrum because he is their gubernatorial candidate in this election cycle. He's also a doctor who does not believe in science and is called a flip-flopper in the Minnesota Senate. His next song is called Increase Worker Pay. The lyrics of Increase Worker Pay we're going to analyze. Increase the pay of working class Minnesotans by phasing out the Minnesota individual income tax. Okay. Original idea, I guess. Radical. I guess you're going to get some attention. Maybe you should ask a oversized NFL star to be your running mate. Maybe that'll get you more attention too. And then saying things like, I'd like to get rid of the individual income tax in Minnesota. He goes on to say he thinks he can phase out the individual income tax over time by growing the private sector economy, cutting wasteful government spending, and utilizing the budget surplus. Okay, a lot to talk about there. I guess they say unpack. A lot to unpack there. First of all, the budget surplus, you can't count on that every budget cycle. Now, we have a budget surplus right now, and of course, you called all your colleagues to tell them to not spend any of it. Great. We have a budget surplus. It is the taxpayers' money, and now it's just sitting. I hope it's in a safe somewhere. I don't know where it is, but it's just sitting there. I was hoping that my money could be used to maybe, I don't know, fix 394 between my house and Minneapolis so I would be able to use it with my motorcycle. At the moment, I avoid that road on my motorcycle because it needs some fixing.
Really? 394 is that bad?
You know, you can be going smooth for a little while and then all of a sudden, boom, boom, and it's just like you break your spine, you know?
Yeah, that's got to be a little concerning, yeah, if you're
exactly.
Driving on that thing.
To me, it's dangerous.
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. That is dangerous, yeah.
So, we have a lot of infrastructure work to do. And you can't, you know, anyway. So, getting back to the point about his idea, and by the way, let's remember the title of this song is Increase Worker Pay. Increasing worker pay means increasing worker pay. It doesn't mean cutting income tax. Now, if you're going to say, well, if you didn't have to pay income tax, you would get increase in your pay. Well, no, those are two different things. And if we get rid of the income tax, we're never going to have a budget surplus. We're only going to have budget deficits, just like we did the last time we allowed a Republican to be the governor of Minnesota. We had deficit after deficit after deficit back then. And then since, again, I can go through the whole fourth tier taxation thing, you know, at some point everybody's just going to get mad when they hear me say that word again. But it's a big reason why we have budget surpluses or balanced budgets in Minnesota for the last 10 years. Now, if we get rid of the income tax, that erases all of that. There will be absolutely no way for Minnesota to make its budget. if we got rid of the income tax. And then he says that growing the private sector economy would cause the income tax to be able to be gotten rid of. He thinks private sector economy, what does he think private companies are going to pay to fix 394? Is that what he's thinking? Not to mention private sector economies. Republicans keep talking about how bad Minnesota is for business. Yet, Minnesota has always been at the first or second for many years in Fortune 500 companies per capita in Minnesota. So Fortune 500 companies don't think it's a bad atmosphere for businesses. We've got some huge companies that have stayed in Minnesota for years and years and years and decades. They don't move away. They don't move away to Florida because the taxes are less. Nor do people. But I don't know. He thinks that by growing the private sector economy, that would make up for all the revenues that we currently pull in from individual income taxes. All of a sudden, the owners of private companies are going to say, yeah, you know what? I'll pitch in. I'll talk to a couple of my business-owning friends. By the way, we don't know each other. I own a business, and I'm running my business, and I'm independent. I don't really want to talk to other business owners. I've worked with business owners trying to get things done at the Capitol, and it's very difficult because independent business owners are independent. It's hard to get independent business owners to work together.
You mean they're all unique? They're not all the same?
Well, you would think that they're just, yeah, they're all the same.
It's a big monolithic group. Everyone thinks the same, runs the same.
Yeah. We all drive Rolls Royces, same color even. This is just asinine when you really – and the thing is that he doesn't think anyone's going to analyze it. He certainly doesn't think people are going to analyze it and then be on a radio show analyzing it for the listeners and voters of Minnesota. Another thing he says is cutting wasteful government spending. Now, he thinks all government spending is wasteful. Now, also owning a business, I know that I have to invest in my business or I will go out of business. When I invest in my business grows. I'm not saying that you should run a state government the same way that you run a business, but that particular thing works kind of the same. If you invest in your state, then your state will grow. That has happened in Minnesota for decades. Republicans fight against it, kicking and screaming all the time, but Minnesota is one of the best – it's always rated one of the best places, one of the best states to live. The quality of living in Minnesota is extremely high. That's because we have a relatively high investment in our state. We try and keep our lakes as clean as we can. We try and keep our roads decent. We hopefully prevent bridges from falling down. And we invest in things like parks. And now we want to invest in transit because we're moving into the future. There are more people and more cars, but the roads – how wide do you want to make your road? Do you want to make your road wider than it is long? Do you think that's going to get rid of traffic? You cannot sustain – and by the way, I saw somebody talking about in Minnesota, 35W is always under construction. Now, I'm pretty old, and yes, 35W has constantly been under construction. 394 used to be just a little tar road. It was called Highway 12. This is before it was called 394. It was a little highway, Highway 12, all the way to Minneapolis. Even when I got my license, that it was that, and I think they expanded it shortly before I got my license to two lanes going each direction, to a four lane instead of just a small highway like you'd find out in rural Minnesota. It was like that in the 1970s. And now it's four and five lanes, and it still sucks. They've started, pretty much since I've gotten my license, at least part of 394 has been under construction, and they can't keep up. 35W, since I got my license, has constantly been under construction. They can't keep up. You can't keep up. We need alternatives. We need to invest. We need to progress into the future. And I can tell you right now that private sector companies are not just going to willfully say, oh, yeah, you know, I know the state has absolutely no revenues coming in. You know what? I'd be glad to pitch in. And let's just get all of the private business owners to pitch in and make sure that the 35W bridge doesn't fall down. Let's build a new bridge. And after that, let's build a whole new highway. Let's build the entire infrastructure of Minnesota. Just us guys. Just us guys. We can do it. We don't need an income tax. We don't need a revenue coming into Minnesota in order to make sure that the water, the drinking water, for instance, right now in Mound, Minnesota, where right by where I live, I did live in Mound about 10 years ago. In the city of Mound, they have been saying, hey, the water's not safe to drink here. And they have been having sewer problems for 12 or 14 years in Mound. And it's because there's not been enough investment from the state of Minnesota, and the city of Mound can't afford it. A lot of smaller cities, especially smaller towns, they can't afford to fix their sewer systems right now. And their sewer systems were made 100 years ago, and they need to be fixed. A lot of their roads were made 100 years ago. They need to be fixed. In Orono, one of the richest communities in Minnesota, we have such a delicate electrical grid that it just goes out. A lot of times it's squirrels. Tucker should kill all the squirrels. The squirrels will just – they'll run up the wire and then they'll short out a transformer. And then the electricity goes down for like 4 square miles in the middle of one of the – you know, they have some of the biggest McMansions on Lake Minnetonka in that area. And those McMansions, they shut down because of a squirrel. It's insane.
That is insane. Just one little squirrel can do that.
Yeah. I mean, if the wind starts blowing, we keep our fingers crossed that the electricity is not going to go off. And then sometimes it's just a regular nice day, the wind's not blowing, and the electricity goes off. And we call in, and then we find out later, oh, it was a squirrel, you know, shorted out a transformer because we haven't been maintaining our infrastructure. Anyway, well, I know we need to take a break. I've been going long on all these segments, so I apologize for that, Brett, because I know you got to pay the bills here. So let's take a break and come back on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Oh, it is that song. I thought it was just the same drum beat. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Brett on the board. Todd Mickelson here sitting in for Matt McNeil. Matt will be back on the 5th of July. And but I'm on here today, and so is a friend of mine, Casey Kasem.
Hello and welcome to Casey Kasem's countdown of the most misleading, misguided, or just stupid things Minnesota Republicans have done this week. Our next artist has consistently had the top four, I believe, or however many of these top five in the countdown. This one's just moved up the chart to number one. Brand new song called Chicken.
Hi, my name is Dr. Scott Jensen, and I'm running to be governor of Minnesota. And tonight I'm at a fundraiser, and there are quite a few chickens here. So I've been talking to them, and what they want more than anything is they want bravery. They want people to speak their mind and not worry about politics, but just throw out some real ideas and have a conversation. So, Governor Walz, these chickens want you and I to debate so we can share with Minnesota what you think and what I think. And let's just not be chicken about it. Let's just have a debate.
Yeah, so that's his newest song. Just reached number one on our charts.
This is just more proof that Republicans think they're clever and funny, but in reality, they are incapable of being either. So this is, let's see, misleading, misguided, stupid. I think it's all three things, and I'll explain why I think so. Misleading is because Walz is not running away from debates. That nobody's been talking about that. I'm sure he was at this fundraiser and people said, you should debate Walz. And he's like, yeah, I should debate Walz. And then, and you can hear them laughing in the background when he says, I've been talking to these chickens. Now, here's why it's stupid. If you're going to use chickens for this particular thing by calling your opponent a chicken for not debating you, then that's what you would say. But instead he says, I've been talking to these chickens. And these chickens say... So I think that's very misguided because that makes you look like you're a crazy idiot. Yeah. Anyway, I think it would be majestic to watch Tim Walz debate Scott Jensen myself. So I guess I'm in agreement with Scott Jensen. I just think that this was
that was just bizarre.
I know.
If we had that sound effect of the humor that doesn't land, that kind of like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, I've been to events like this, and I can tell that somebody got their phone out, and then he started talking, and then people thought, oh, he's so clever and funny. He's talking. And, you know, and they're at a house that has chickens. So it's – But then the fact that he tries to use it and put it on social media and put it on his website and actually tout it as a real thing, that means everybody's going to talk about it. Some people might even go on the radio and point out how much of a idiot he looks like. But so you agree. It was probably misled, misguided, and stupid.
Yeah, yeah. Most times politicians are not as funny as they think they are.
Yeah, yeah. The bar is low.
Yeah.
Same as on the radio here, actually, I got to say. Lucky for me. Here's one thing. Mark Warner, Senator Mark Warner, points out, on this day in 1982, exactly 40 years ago today, President Reagan signed and reauthorized the Voting Rights Act, which had passed Congress with huge bipartisan majorities. I'm ashamed that my colleagues have politicized basic voting rights to the point where this is no longer a bipartisan priority. Ronald Reagan, certainly not a hero of mine. I believe he is almost solely responsible for completely decimating the American economy and turning everybody, all Americans, into being in debt instead of being able to afford the things that they have. Used to be that you only, you know, you took out a loan for your house and your car, and the rest of it you bought when you could afford it. And most people could afford most things. But beginning in the Reagan economy, people put things on their credit cards. He cut taxes, and then we went into a recession and then trickled down. Oh, my God. But he was on our side in the Voting Rights Act. So even Ronald Reagan looks like a great Democrat by today's standards. Anyway, all right, well, that's it for me. Hopefully I'll see you again when Matt decides to take another vacation. Let's hope that comes real soon. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Brett on the board. You've been listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll see you next time.